February 4th, 2019, Monday, Wan Prat, Lunar Observance Day. It's snowing, and that means that school is canceled tomorrow. So, thought that would be a good start for a talk about gladdening the mind. It's nice to have these way places in our practice, or like when we can stop and take stock of things, or just stop and rest and look around and then forget about the past and forget about our future plans, at least temporarily, and come back to the present and feel where we're at. Because the practice can be such a struggle sometimes, and it's like we're practicing and we're just sort of putting one foot in front of the other, just trudging along, and it can be like that sometimes. And if we're living here in this monastery and we're keeping the rules, then whether we know it or not, we're completely steeped in the practice. There may be little distractions that we might get involved with, but mostly they have a wholesome aspect to them. So we're steeped. We're steeped in the middle. We're like in a big boiling pot of practice, and it's kind of like a big bowl of medicine that we're immersed in, or that we're immersing the heart in. But then there's certain things. There's like accretions. I keep pronouncing things wrong. I have to pronounce things right. Accretions. I hope that's right. Accretions on the heart that dissolve in this medicine, and it can be painful. So we might have experiences during our practice of wanting to escape, wanting to run away, wanting to indulge in some really extreme sense pleasure, and just somehow that will make things okay. It's totally irrational. Or we may be able to rationalize it if we're creative enough. So it's nice to have times when we just step back and laugh at ourselves a little bit and take stock of things and set aside the past and set aside the future and come back to just taking a few deep breaths in the present and then just being here now and giving ourselves a little break is important sometimes. Because also with these readings from the suttas and from Lungpo Cha and the talk about striving, or some of us might be reading the biography of Ajahn Mun and then the talk about striving, but also that's condensed into a little book. It's years and years, decades of practice for these great Ajahns and condensed into a little book, so it's hard to get our mind around what their life was really like, what their practice was really like. For them, it was still the day-to-day. When they were living and practicing, it was still just the day-to-day practice, the putting one foot in front of the other, the coming back to the present, the setting aside the past and the future. For them, it was the same as what we have to do. But they had the patient endurance and the barami to see it through to completion. They had the persistence, so we can achieve almost anything with enough persistence. Whatever we want to achieve, we can achieve it with persistence. We overcome the frustration. We make mistakes. We fail. A big part of it is just learning how to make mistakes, learning how to fail. Learning is just one failure after another, just seeing why it didn't work, what didn't work, just continuing to investigate in that way. So, what is the practice? What is Buddhism? There's sometimes talk about what is Buddhism, and Buddhism, is it a religion? Is it a philosophy? Is it a belief system? And my opinion, the definition I like is that Buddhism is a training. Buddhism is a training. Buddha Dhamma is a training of body, speech, and mind to cultivate the wholesome, relinquish the unwholesome, cultivate the skillful, relinquish the unskillful. And all of the metaphysical aspect and the talk of other realms and devas and all of that is to get us to train, to convince us that it's worth training. They talk about the ultimate reality of Nibbana and so on is to convince us that this is desirable. And so to train in the Noble Eightfold Path for this. It's like the Noble Truth of Suffering, train to see this, train to understand this, the noble truth of the origin of suffering, train to realize this, train to abandon this, the truth of the cessation of suffering, train to see this, train to realize this, train to manifest this, and the truth of the Noble Path leading to the cessation of suffering. Train in this Sila Samadhi Panya, this virtue, mental cultivation, and discernment. And it's not that the unwholesome and the wholesome are the same thing. They're very different. The unskillful and the skillful, it's like night and day. It's like night is very different than day. Day is very different than night. So the experience of our life is very different whether we're in the unwholesome, in the unskillful, or in the wholesome, in the skillful. So we can, our experience of life, our attitude towards life, or the way we live our life is very, very different depending on which of these two paths we're on. So finding ways to gladden the mind, come into the skillful, bring joy into the heart, keep ourselves contented and happy by training ourselves in various reflections, being content with our requisites, being content with our food, our dwelling places, and so on, these teachings we've been studying. And then also things like gratitude and thankfulness, absorbing into what we're thankful for rather than what we're irritated by or want to see different, depending on our mind is going to be unwholesome or wholesome, depending on what reflections we bring up and the way we bring them up. So if we want to make the mind unwholesome and create more and more causes for dukkha, then we can bring up thoughts about things we don't like, things we're not grateful for, things we want to see done away with, destroyed, things we want to protest against, and so on. Or we can make the mind wholesome by bringing up a sense of gratitude, thankfulness. We can be thankful for almost anything. It's more our attitude towards it. So we can be thankful for the fact that we have enough food to eat. We can be thankful for the people who support us. We can be thankful for our mother, our father. We can be thankful for our teachers. We can be thankful for the earth that we stand on, the air that we breathe, all these things that allow us to exist and be alive here and now. All these things are here, and we can practice because of them. We have an earth to stand on. We have air to breathe. Water, we can be thankful for the water that we drink, the snow, making everything peaceful and quiet. Thankful for our friends in the Dhamma for helping to support us and encouraging us. Thankful for whatever situations led us to the Dhamma. Thankful for our faculties, just the fact that we have sense faculties that we can use and that allow us to survive and exist and practice. This is one part of Yoniso Manisikara, just directing our awareness to skillful objects so we can either direct our awareness to an unskillful or a skillful object. And so, like, if we wanted to direct our awareness to an unskillful object, be like something we're critical of, we might be critical of ourselves, or something we're judgmental of, some aspect of our personality we may not like, or some aspect of our past or our lives, or it may even be ways that we are that other people have been critical of us as well in the past. And I know this well, and so if we want to make the mind unwholesome, we can focus on these. That's ayoniso manisikara, so that's the unwise or wrongly directed attention that's going to bring us dukkha, bring us suffering. We have the yoniso manisikara, the wise direction of attention, so directing the attention to anything that's going to make the mind skillful, wholesome. So one of those things is gratitude, thankfulness, appreciation, Another one of those things is generosity, giving, sharing. So directing our attention to that. And when we're habitually directing our attention in a skillful way, and it becomes second nature to us, sometimes we might be a little bit hard on ourselves, like, oh, I just can't stop thinking, I can't stop proliferating. But the Buddha encourages us there. He said, when you habitually direct your mind in a skillful way, then even your mental proliferations become wholesome. Because they're no longer like, you know, oh, that person did that to me, or I'm irritated with this or that. They're more like, how can I help? What can I do to help this person? Oh, this person's having a rough time. What can I do to help them? Or how can I fix this particular situation? Or how can I repair this thing? So the mental proliferations become around generosity or the wholesome. Or how can I give this person my attention? How can I help out somehow? Or that wholesome direction of attention might become part of our Dhamma Vichaya, like our Dhamma contemplation, that if our thoughts are connected towards the Dhamma all the time, then it can lead us in a good direction. So thinking, well, okay, maybe in this one area I'm discontent, so how can I be more content? Or I'm not patient in this area, how can I be more patient? So these are all really, really wholesome trains of thought. Or even contemplations of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So the Buddha said anicca, what does he really mean by that? And we can think and ponder and proliferate a lot over that. Or here some of the junior monks are looking after the more senior monks. It's called upatak, or the attendant. So that's a practice of coming out of yourself and attending to somebody else. So our practice is no longer then self-centric, but it becomes an other-centric practice where we consciously make somebody else almost like the meditation object, like, okay, attending to, trying to be attentive to what they might need. And so that's also one type of yoniso manisikara. And this, in the day-to-day grind of our life, this may seem like a small thing, but we have to remember that in the Dhammapada, the Buddha said that he didn't see one state that's more conducive to developing the path than yoniso manisikara. Wise attention, or wise directing of attention. And then sometimes we can kind of surprise ourselves where it's like we live here and we do the practice and we have all sorts of successes and failures and mistakes and happiness and suffering, and it goes on, and we live in this practice over the weeks, months, years, decades, and sometimes we might get to a state where like we're just sure we're going to give up. And I've been in this place many times, and I know many others have as well, and just like, sure, we're going to throw in the towel. Sure, we're going to give up. And then we just keep putting one foot in front of the other and just keep going forward and somehow then something opens up, some new pathway opens up, or some new perspective, some new way of seeing things opens up, or some unwholesome aspect of the mind gets seen for the first time, or we have an insight into how to make the mind more wholesome. And so the practice becomes very, very real. It's not theoretical anymore at that point. Or it may even get to the point where every single thing we experience seems to have some sort of, carry some sort of weight or have some sort of meaning in our practice. But then we have to be careful that it doesn't get too intense. So then finding ways to direct the attention towards peace and ease, well-being. Being very open, being in a state where, okay, well, just don't know what's going to happen next. So being very open to what might happen in the practice, and also acknowledging that we don't actually know what the goal is or what the goal is like, what we're actually striving for. So many of us, if not all of us, will have some sort of idea what true peace is or true happiness is, but having never experienced it before, we have to have that openness as well. Say, well, that's kind of like Lungpo Cha saying when he's describing these really deep states of peace that he was attaining later on in his practice, and he, in one of the talks where he's talking about his body exploding into fine particles and then the whole world exploding into fine particles and the mind going into this place, and he makes this statement. He says, I didn't even know peace like that existed. I didn't even know it was possible. Once we feel like we're content or like we can keep ourselves uplifted, that's kind of like an in-breath, inspiration. We inhale, we're inspired. But then that leads to the out-breath, so that's the exhalation. So I like to think of this as like once we're encouraged, once we're uplifted, then we go into peace, we go into the exhalation, we go into fading or dispassion. Like the in-breath can be energizing, uplifting, vital, can revitalize us, but then the out-breath is the letting go of the peace. So it's like ending, cessation. So, on that note, not much else is coming up, and we have this opportunity to practice on the Lunar Observance Day in the snow, and observe the peace and quiet, and I'll leave it there for this evening. Sadhu.